This is John Floridis. Welcome to Musicians Spotlight. Our guest today is Azar Lawrence. This is John Floridis. Welcome to Musicians Spotlight. I'm very pleased to welcome Azar Lawrence to the show.
Thank you very much for having me.
It's great to have you, Azar. The most recent recording project is called The Seeker.
That's correct.
And in addition to his work as a frontman, he is very well known for his work with Miles Davis, McCoy Tyner, Freddie Hubbard, and Woody Shaw, among many others. And in doing my research to get a better feel for the extent of your work, there's some amazing stuff beyond that, even as if that wasn't enough.
No, thank you.
Yeah, the work with Ike and Tina Turner, War.
Correct.
Frank Zappa, doing some writing with Maurice White of Earth, Wind, and Fire.
Correct. That's right.
Marvin Gaye.
On the Hear My Dear album.
Yeah, Muddy Waters.
That's
and Busta Rhymes.
Well, yeah. Did you see the video?
Yeah.
Isn't that something?
That is something. And I love stories like that. I love just being able to see and hear about musicians who just get to experiment with so many different, you know, flavors, musically speaking.
Interesting. Yeah, I just enjoy being able to find my way through kind of a chameleon type of approach to it, music, and play different genres of music and do it well, authentically. Mm-hmm. And that was one of the goals that I set for myself, was to be able to play different authentically play in different genres of music. And I was speaking with someone yesterday, and I was, Craig Hall, who's playing bass with us here. We went to breakfast in Bozeman, and it was kind of an authentic Montana place. And yeah, you know, with the cowboy stuff and the memorabilia and Billy and what have you. And so I was telling him, since they were playing a lot of bluegrass music, that when I was doing a lot of heavy writing, and at one time I was a writer for with Capitol Records, and I had a song that didn't make it on the record, but it was being held by Dolly Parton.
Oh.
And so, you know.
I was going to say, if you're going to tell me you played with Bill Monroe or something, I'm going to lose it. That's fantastic.
Wow. Yeah, so I was really, you know, pleased at the end. It didn't, you know, she picked something else, but she held, you know, held the song, so it was authentic enough for her to hold the song.
Wow,
you know?
That's fantastic. Well, we should probably tell listeners the reason we have the opportunity to visit with you is through the Daily Jazz Concert Series in Missoula. And we're doing this interview in mid-May, and we're at the Hilton Hotel here in Missoula. I guess starting off, what I wanted to talk about was the saxophone and how early it came to be a part of your life, and how early you kind of started this whole journey.
Yeah, actually, the saxophone itself came into my life around 8 or 9, I think.
That's early.
Yeah, it's pretty early. And then, but before that, I was a violinist and a little piano. And at any rate, so the saxophone came because I was getting older and my voice had dropped. I also had done some singing, and my mother would play piano. She was a great pianist and inspiration, and directed. She wanted one of her children to be a musician. My father had a friend. He was also very supportive, and he had a friend that would come and on the weekend sometime and lay by our swimming pool. We lived up in Baldwin Hills, and when a lot of people of color weren't there. And any rate, and he would always bring his flute. And then one day he brought an alto saxophone. I was like, oh, man, he was playing that. I was like, that's it right there. Mm. But at any rate, then once I told my father, man, that is it. And so then, of course, he took me out and got me an alto saxophone the very next week.
Azar, when I hear you talk about this, all these different experiences you had, starting at a very early age, what comes to mind is, were there moments along the way where, you know, you really felt, okay, this is the journey I'm going to take. I'm going to keep going with this, and this is going to be my life's journey.
Oh yeah, I pretty much had already
made up your mind at that point.
Well, yeah, you know, I was already there.
So it was 16. No turning back at that point.
Oh, no. But you know what? In college, high school and in college, I was a science major. I had envisioned being a doctor or a chemist.
This is what I'm talking about.
Yeah, I was in there for some reason. But also we learned, you know, always have something, you know, a diversified approach to life. So, you know, you can't have all your eggs in one basket. Then during that particular early time, in the couple of years after graduation, I also became a journeyman framer and sheeter. And so, yeah, my brother and I, we learned hook and crook through, you know, I don't even want to tell you how we got into the union, but we learned how to frame and sheet, you know, houses. And I did quite a few things in Palm Springs, Indio, and some things in Los Angeles.
Hmm.
Yeah, but I had my horn. I had my horn with me, you know. We had a Land Cruiser, and we were just everywhere, and we'd stay in these hotels and out there in the desert when we were working out there. And then when we got in the desert, it gets so hot that you could only work up to noon.
Right.
So, you know, it was like under 16 degree heat and just that and other. So but then I'd go in the bathroom and practice when we were in the hotel, you know, after we got back in, you know. So, yeah, you know, interesting, right?
That's great
That's
stuff.
Crazy.
This is John Floridis. You're listening to Musicians Spotlight. I'm speaking with Azar Lawrence. I want to come back to McCoy Tyner because I know that with all these great names of musicians that you've worked with, he's someone who had a special place in your history and as an influence, as an inspiration. Let's talk a little bit about your work with him.
Well, okay. Let me complete the thought that when Elvin Jones, like I was saying, Gene Perla and Steve, they said, you don't want to live with Elvin. Because he's going to be like a parent, this, that, and the other. So when I first got to New York, they said, well, go to our place. So they took me up to this place. I don't know where it was. And then they left. They left me. I didn't know where I was. They left me there. And, you know, the sheets looked like they had never been changed in years.
Right.
And everything had been done with them and on them. And then, oh, yeah. Oh, yeah. So I looked at that. So then I was getting ready to practice. I had my horn set up. And then I went and turned the faucet on, and a roach infestation. The whole sink area turned black. They came they came out of the pipe in a grove. So bad. Now, I don't know where I was. Didn't have a key to the place. Didn't, and so I couldn't go out to call Elvin or anything. And so because it was, you go downstairs, there's another door that locks, you know, to get in, mm-hmm. but you had to boss somebody. So, oh, man, I slept sitting in the chair because what really got me, what really got me is when I said, oh, man, so I went over into the living room area where my home was set up. And then when I took the mouthpiece cap off to play the horn, a roach came up between the reed and he stuck his head. I was like, that'll do it. So the next day I called Elvin and you know, and they told me, come on down. So I lived with Elvin for 2.5 years. So anyway, then my dream was always to play with McCoy Tyner. And so one time we were playing at the Vanguard and McCoy was coming the next week and Alphonse Mouzon came down. And when he heard me, he said, oh, man, I'm going to tell McCoy, this is you the cat we need. And so he said, we're going to play next week, man. I'm going to arrange for you to come down and sit in. Now I was like, okay, knowing that we were leaving town. Hmm. Well, Elvin's gig got canceled, so I was in town, and I went down, and sure enough, McCoy said, well, you want to play, buddy? I said, yeah. So I went and played, and you know, he didn't say anything. I didn't know what key it was in or anything. So I played, and afterwards, McCoy was lingering around talking to people, and people were talking to me, and then he came over to me and said, hey, man, you like playing music? I said, yeah, that's what I'm out here doing. And so he said, let me get your telephone number. I said, okay. And so the next day I got a, they said, you got a call. I was like, who's that? And so I got, and he said, hey, this is McCoy. So I was like, they probably heard me scream all the way to Los Angeles. So, yeah. Anyway, he said, I want you to join the band. Mm. So when I told Elvin, he cried.
Mm.
Yeah. So.
Wow. Just to end the sentence there, he cried. I mean, that's intense.
Yeah, it is.
That's really intense.
Yeah. Well, you know, they considered themselves my adopted parents. I mean, I was too young. And I had just turned 21 when I got with McCoy.
Well, talk about what that was like for you. I mean, to see this guy that, who had taken on that kind of role in your life, and Elvin, to experience those kind of emotions, show you those emotions, and then you're gonna go on and continue your journey.
Yeah, he said, you got to go.
The page has turned.
Yes, that's, he that's said, so you got to go, huh? I said, yeah.
Wow.
But, he had come to my bedroom one night and knocked on the door, and I opened the door, and he was standing there, and he said, you know, people ask me why I play like I do. He said, my father worked himself to death in the steel mills in Pontiac, Michigan, buying to make sure that, you know, I had drums. He said, that's why I play like I do. And so then he cried, and then I cried, and then we both cried. So, and then after that, every time I hear him or think about it, you know, you see it brings tears to my eyes now. So.
Yeah, wow.
Anyway, so McCoy and I became very, very, very close. But then I moved out to Jersey, and then he and I became even closer. And so let's say if we worked in, in Philly or Boston or 4 hours, you know, D.C. or something, that he and I would get in the car, McCoy and I would get in the car and drive back that night. And then he'd pick me up the next day in enough time to get back for the gig.
Mm.
Yeah, so we spent a lot of time together.
Azar, I wanted to ask a question. I was thinking of something I could ask. It was a little bit different than some of the other questions I normally ask musicians. And I was thinking about the concept of improvisation. I was watching one of your YouTube videos, and I thought, let's try to kind of think about the concept of improvisation and what the listener, the folks who are listening to this program, perhaps they're not hardcore jazz fans, perhaps they've never played jazz music. What is it, first off, that you could try to say to someone who fit that description in terms of how to listen to improvisation, how to listen to musicians who are improvising, mm-hmm. and how that can expand their horizons as a person?
Well, it's interesting enough. I mean, this is a kind of a reach as an example, but let's say you decide, you and your family, to go on picnics once a week. So this week we're going to go out and we're going to set up the horseshoe and throw horseshoes. Mm-hmm. Well, let me see now. We've done that a couple of times. Now, what's next? What are we going to do? Okay, let's set up the soccer ball and kick that around. Okay, well, next week we're going to bring the softball and the bat, and I'll hit that with the kids and play. And okay, well, next time we're going to bring the jump rope. Mm-hmm. And so that's improvising in the sense mm-hmm. that you're coming up with you're becoming creative, uh-huh. you're just in a fixed format, the format being the music or the song or the picnic. This is something that the picnic is the song, but then within that.
Sort of reinventing the picnic each time you go out on the picnic.
Yeah.
Is that maybe a way to look at it?
Exactly, and to uh-huh. keep it refreshing and creative and something to look forward to and a reason to even do it.
Now, I want to go another step further. Let's say the person listening to this let's say they play a little folk guitar, let's say they maybe have studied classical piano, but they've never really tried to improvise. Mm-hmm. How would you explain to someone how to begin that process in just like the most basic sense?
I think that one would have to discover that as they delved more into the instrument itself, as far as devotion of time, like just back to the picnic, yeah. over X amount of time, then we've done that so many times now, Dad. Can I bring a friend, or can I bring three friends this time? In fact, let's go to the zoo this time and have the picnic on the zoo grounds. It'd be all, you know, the creativity is improvising, you know, even if it's just the addition of an emotion mm-hmm. into a standard classical piece that you're not going to change the actual content,
right?
But you're going to add emotion.
Thank you. This is John Floridis. You're listening to Musicians Spotlight. I'm speaking today with saxophonist, composer, songwriter. What some of the jobs he mentioned?
Oh, no.
Scientist. Could have been scientist.
Yes, that's right.
But musician extraordinaire, Azar Lawrence. The Seeker is the name of the most recent recording, the one coming up here in the end of 2015, we're looking forward.
Oh, yeah, that's called Elementals.
Elementals, so keep your ears and eyes open for that. One of the places you can find information about that will undoubtedly be Azar's website, azarlawrence.com. His first
that's
name
correct.
Is spelled A-Z-A-R. Well, as you just mentioned, in between clips here, your mom's advice is in your ears, telling you to get to practice.
That's correct.
Because as we are recording this, he still has to do some playing tonight. What a pleasure getting a chance to talk shop with you today.
I appreciate you too.
Thanks for making time for Musician Spotlight. Some great stories in and around through the musical journey as well. So thank you very much.
Thank you.
This is John Floridis. You've been listening to Musicians Spotlight. Our guest today has been Azar Lawrence. If you'd like to contact us, you can do so through the Montana Public Radio website, mtpr.org. You can also contact us at our own website, musicianspotlight.org, as well as through Facebook. Our program is now available as a downloadable podcast from those websites as well as through iTunes. Special thanks to the Daily Jazz series for this interview. Musicians Spotlight is a production of Montana Public Radio.